The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, gang, we're back. This is Red Leg Nation Radio. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. Thanks for joining us again after all this time. You know, for a while now, I've been planning to get this thing up and running again. I was going to do a quick podcast to sort of update everyone where we've been and, you know, what the plans are for Red Leg Nation Radio for the podcast. And earlier today, I saw on Twitter, our friends over at Red Reporter, they said they were going to be recording a new episode of their podcast. Subscribe to the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast, please. And also go subscribe to Red Reporter's podcast. Great stuff. Always good stuff. Those are good guys over there. But anyway, it just got me thinking, you know, they're going to do it. Let's just go ahead and do this thing and get started. Now, I am, you may have noticed, I'm flying solo tonight. And I'm sorry about that. Although you do get to enjoy this gorgeous southern accent all by myself, nobody else. Exciting, huh? Yeah, I thought so. So, a couple things before we get started. Number one, Red Leg Nation Radio is still very much alive, I do promise. We're going to get back into the swing of things very soon and talk about this this fun season. The second thing is, there's a really good reason, I promise, there's a really good reason that we haven't recorded a podcast in a little while. Now, I can't wait to be able to tell you all about it. Can't tell you about it just yet, but I promise there's a good reason. It's exciting stuff, I think, for the future of Red Leg Nation and something we'll definitely be talking about in future podcasts. Now, is that enough of a teaser for you? I thought so. Now, the first thing that I mentioned up above there was that the Red Leg Nation Radio is still very much alive, and it is, and I'm looking forward to getting back to talking about the Reds with you guys, but you know that might be a bad thing. So I want to go ahead and apologize off the top. Do you really want to hear anybody talking about the Reds these days? Rough season, eh? You know, maybe you needed our help to sort of dig through the pathetic first, 46 games of the season. I think we're at 46 now. Yeah, the Reds are 15-31. Pretty good, huh? On a pace, I figured it out earlier today, on a pace to go 53-109. No, they're not on a pace to win 59 games. That's optimistic. 53-109. And what's crazy to me, first of all, about that is that that's awful. It would be by far the worst season in Reds history. They're not even the worst team in the majors. They're not even one of the two worst teams in the majors right now. There's the third worst. There are two teams that are worse right now. Obviously, it's the Braves, Atlanta Braves, and the Minnesota Twins, each of whom have only won 12 games as of the recording of this fine audio product that you're listening to right now. So, hey, there's something to be optimistic about, right? We're not as bad as two of the most historically inept teams in the history of baseball. So, no, that's not very exciting, and, you know, is what it is. Reds are awful so far this year. It's been even worse than I thought. You know, I said before the season, I mean, we all knew they were going to be bad. Everybody knew that. Well, I'm not sure from reading some of the angry comments on Twitter that everyone knew, but everyone should have known they were going to be bad. And I did say before the season, and probably not very wisely so, that not only did I not think they were going to lose 100 games, I thought there was a decent chance they wouldn't lose 90 games this year. I mean, they're going to be below 500, I figured. I didn't realize how bad injuries were going to kill them, especially to the pitching staff, but also to everyday players, as we'll talk about in a moment. And the other thing was, I could not have imagined. I don't think anyone could have imagined. I hope Reds management didn't have any idea how bad the bullpen would be. And the bullpen's not the only problem with this team. but it's a problem. And I've never seen anything like it. We'll talk about that in just one moment. So, but how bad are the Reds this year? You know, I looked at that earlier this week and went back and looked at some of the earlier bad Reds teams. And if the season ended as we are now, it would be the worst, not only the most losses the Reds have ever had, but the worst winning percentage that the team had ever had. Previous worst season, I think everyone sort of believes that 1982 was the worst season the Reds have ever had. And it's not a bad choice. It's certainly top five, top four, as I'm looking at it. The Reds lost 101 games that year. So that's why everyone says, oh, that's the worst. That's the worst. Now, I don't want to discount that 1982 season. I don't want to underrate how bad it was, especially if you were a kid like I was, just getting into baseball, and that was one of the teams you cut your teeth on. That's pretty sad. But the 1934 Reds, now if any of you remember the 1934 Reds, you need to get in touch with me. Okay, we'll have you on the podcast in a future episode. 1934 Reds went 52-99. Winning percentage of .344. Still not as bad as the current winning percentage, but bad enough, I would say. And the second worst team in Reds history, 1937, just 3 years later, 56-98. So pretty bad teams there. The 2015 Reds were 12th. That was last year's. They lost 98 games because they won 64. Longer season now than it was back then. .395 winning percentage. And I wrote earlier this week, I don't know why we would call that a winning percentage. Very little winning going on. But when I look back at some of these bad teams, because I'm all constantly trying to find a reason to be optimistic, and it's tough sometimes, you guys know that. With this Reds franchise over the last 20 years, we've had a really pretty good run there for a while from 2010 to 2013. But other than that, it's been pretty barren since 95. Even 99, which was a fun season, the Reds didn't make it into the playoffs. So I went back and looked to see, how the Reds compare. How does this bad Reds team compare? And it's not looking too good. It's not shaping up very good. Especially if the Reds end up losing 100 this year, it's going to be one of the worst back-to-back, maybe the worst back-to-back seasons in franchise history. And that's pretty bad. I don't know. 32-33 were pretty bad. Lost 94 games each of those seasons in 154 game seasons. That's pretty bad. But when I looked back at it, there were really two eras that were really bad. And the first one was actually 1913-1916. 1913-1916, the worst season in there was 1914, where they lost 94. 1916, they lost 93. But they lost 89 and 83 in the other two of those seasons. And, of course, 1916, when they lost, they went 60-93, 3 years later, world champions. The other bad stretch was 1929-1937. And this was an awful season. From 1930 to 1934, actually, those five seasons, all of those rank among the nine worst seasons in club history. Five in a row. Now, you think we have it bad now? Let's try living in that time. First of all, you likely wouldn't be with us now. And if you were, you would be finishing up your span as a Reds fan with another poor team. But those five in a row never won more than 39% of their games. And of course, 1937 was the next to second worst season by winning percentage in Reds history. And of course, 2 years after that, the Reds were National League champions. And then 1 year after that, the Reds won the World Series. So, as I wrote, such a brilliant prediction here, and you need to really hold me to this. It seems, based on history, that the Reds are going to win the World Series within a couple of years, or within 3 years. So, I think you can probably take that to the bank, but don't really take that to a bank. So, obviously I was joking about guaranteeing a win. I do still feel like this Reds team is in a better position than were, for example, the 2001 Reds. You know, 1999 Reds had that great run and lost in the one-game playoff to the Mets. And then 2000, a winning record again. And then 2001 on, just a mess. Just a mess until the 2010 championship team. And, you know, I'm not telling you all anything that you don't know. You were there. You lived through it, unless you're a very recent Reds fan. And if you are, you know, lucky you. Most of the time you've been following the Reds, they've been pretty good. You don't know what to expect here. You don't know. You've not lived through something like these last year and a half. But, you know, you look back at those old teams, and they just were not well constructed, number one. And, you know, Carl Lindner was the owner at the time and a great guy. He's been a great philanthropist. We've talked about Lindner on the podcast many times while he was even still owned the team. And you can't say anything bad about him. Well, I'm sure you can say bad things about him. I don't know the guy personally, so I'm not going to say anything bad about him. But he wasn't as willing as Bob Castellini, the current ownership group. Lindner wasn't as willing to spend money. And so I think that's number one. I'll start there. I think Castellini's proven that he will open the checkbook if he thinks that there's a chance that it's going to make the Reds competitive, because he likes to win. He's a fan. Now, obviously, we can argue about whether or not he spent money wisely on certain things. A lot of you will argue the Homer Bailey deal was not wise. There are good arguments that say it wasn't wise, and I don't discount any of those arguments. I think that had he been healthy, there's a very good chance that Homer Bailey would have earned every penny of that deal. But there are arguments. The Brandon Phillips deal, probably not very wise, probably based on emotion. Phillips may end up, you know, being worth what he's getting paid by the end of that deal. It may not be as bad as it looked initially. I don't know. It's going to be close. Probably not wise to sign a second baseman to a long-term deal at his age. But that is what it is. We can argue. Everybody's going to argue about Joey Votto as well. And should we have signed Cueto to another extension? We can argue about all that. Okay, I've got my opinions. And I've shared my opinions to the consternation of many. But the point here is that Castellini's not shy about opening up the checkbook. So, I mean, I think that's where we're in a different position, number one. That's the first place we're in a different position than the Reds were way back when we were suffering through the early 2000s. What do you call that? You know, the 80s, the 90s, the aughts? I don't know that we ever settled on what you call that. I guess now's the 10s again, or the teens. I don't know. See, now you made me lose my train of thought. Stop distracting me. So the other reason why I think, or one of the other reasons why I think the Reds are in a better position, I guess in a position not to have this a long 2001 all the way to 2010, a big long span of being bad. First of all, the Reds haven't had that many spans in history where they've been that bad for that long. You know, there have been a couple. But I think that the Reds are in a better position right now than they were in 2001. Or really 2002, which is sort of the same span of the rebuild process, in that the Reds have a number of very good prospects that are about to come up, mostly on the pitching side. And when you think about that pitching back in the aughts, you know, the Jimmy Haineses and the Jimmy Andersons and the Jose Acevedos and, you know, that the Chris Rietzmas and, you know, some guys that maybe did a good thing here and there, but mostly it was bargain basement pitching. And the Reds now have, you know, I could probably count 9 guys that if 5 of them pan out, you've got a starting role. Really 4, because Bailey's going to be around for a little bit longer. If they pan out, then, you know, we're going to be in good shape. And, you know, we're talking about Rosell Iglesias, I think, is if he can stay healthy. And these are big ifs. I know pitchers, you can't trust that they're going to stay healthy. I understand. That's why I'm saying if you take all these guys, you may get, heck, even if you only get 3 of them that can stay healthy out of, you know, Iglesias and Anthony DeSclafani and Robert Stevenson and Cody Reed And then you got the guys who, even if they don't make the rotation, guys like Brandon Finnegan, who looked great this week, went toe-to-toe with Clayton Kershaw. And you know, Brandon Finnegan is just barely worse than Clayton Kershaw based upon the results of that 1-0 game. There's another guarantee for you. You know, Finnegan and Michael Lorenzen and, you know, even guys like Moscott and, boy, Daniel Wright that pitched against the Dodgers, made his major league debut, shows a lot of, you know, he hammers the strike zone. You know, just and he was a guy that wasn't even expected to be a whole lot. So there are a number of guys that even if they don't pan out, John Lamb, I didn't mention John Lamb. They've got Amir Garrett. Yeah, I keep thinking of him as the St. John's basketball player. He's given up basketball for baseball, thank goodness, but left-hander that throws hard, and I won't be able to forgive him for being a St. John's basketball player. It's going to take me a while to forget that and get over it, but if he starts winning games for the Reds, I'll be okay. But there's a big group there that I think, number one, can shore up this rotation pretty quickly, because a lot of these guys are either already ready, when you think about guys like Iglesias and DeSclafani, and, you know, Stevenson and Reed are just on the cusp, that could fix this rotation immediately when they get healthy, but also can fix this bullpen. And the bullpen has been disastrous, as you know. And I want to go over some of the performances of the Reds quickly here in just one moment, so I'll get into the bullpen in a little bit. But I think that's a big difference in what we had to go through in the early 2000s. There was never a big group of prospects close. Most of them are pitching now. Prospects. We do have Jesse Winker, who I think's got a chance to be an outstanding player for the Reds. We've got Jose Peraza, I think that guy's going to be a player. You know, Eugenio Suarez is, you know, up and down a little bit this year, but I think has a chance to be on the next good Reds team. So there are some young position players, but if you just look at the pitching side, man, it just seems to me like we're just in a different position than we were in 2001, 2002. And it really wasn't until, you know, Cueto and Bailey came up, and then we started getting the Bruces and the Vados coming up, that the Reds really started pushing into that 2010 championship team. So I think we're a little bit closer to, you know, 2006, 2007 maybe. I think if the front office makes the right moves. Because there are places they're going to have to fill in. There are places they're going to have to upgrade, places they're going to have to improve. And how they execute on that is going to be telltale whether or not they can take this moment where they're really, I think, have a chance to be competitive within a couple years. I really do believe that. Or at least start getting back to being competitive. They could also screw it up. I mean, they could. I like what I hear from Dick Williams, the guy that's going to be the full-time GM next year after Jocketty steps into the shadows. But there's, you know, there are good arguments that he's not going to be the guy we need. He's not Theo Epstein, certainly, but he seems to be open-minded, and I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. So, again, trying to be optimistic, hey, you know, we could be okay in a couple years. On the other hand, if they make the wrong decisions, and I'll probably criticize because that's what we do, right? It's a critical society. We like to criticize the people that are in the arena. What would I do? I don't know. You know, I probably have Peraza at short. Maybe not right this very second because Zach Cozart's been amazing. But I think long term, Peraza at short. Move Suarez over to second. You know, Adam Duvall has been, he's got some power anyway. He's been decent. His natural position, I believe, is third base. Move him there. Get Winker in left field. Hamilton. He can't hit, but he's just unbelievably fun to watch with the glove. Right field, I don't know. Steve at RedLegNation.com had a really interesting post last week about whether the Reds should sign Jay Bruce to an extension. I don't know if I do that. Although I love Jay, and I probably would because I'm a fan. You know, I'm not objective enough probably to make the right decision on that. I like Jay. I like what he's done for the Reds. I'll never forget being in the ballpark on September 28th, 2010 for what they call Clinchmas, when he hit that big home run to clinch the division championship. I mean, you know, those are things that matter to me that shouldn't matter to the guys making the decision on the club. And it matters to me because it's a great memory in my life and because I don't have to make those decisions. I can just be a fan. But if I'm being objective and trying to, you know, say what would I do, you know, Bruce is having a good year, having an outstanding year, his best year in some time. If you look at it, hitting 264, 319 on base, 507 slugging, 118 OPS plus. He's got 8 homers, 28 RBIs. I mean, what more do you want out of the guy? 29-year-old. I'll take that production out of him, 826 OPS. I'll take that. Do you sign him to an extension? I don't know. Yeah, he might be okay for the next 3 years. He also might, since he's hitting well, be an excellent trade chip. Maybe he's an asset now. Maybe he's rebuilt his trade value and then get something that'll help him for the next 7 years, 8 years, rather than just the next 3. So those are, I don't know what's out there. I don't know what the market's like. Those are the decisions that that the Reds are going to have to make, and I don't envy them. But if they can execute some of these, make some of these decisions well, I think they've got a chance that there's enough pitching right now that they can be competitive. I'm not promising you a world championship. Actually, I did promise you a world championship in 3 years. How do I work myself out of this box? No, I mean, really, you know, I think there's a very good chance that even in 2018, they could be a competitive team, an above 500 team. May not be a playoff team, but I think if they're back to an above 500 team, that's a pretty substantial improvement, and I think that's plenty. I'd be happy with that. I just like seeing a competitive Reds team with a chance every once in a while to take that next step. And a topic I think of a future podcast is going to be how we seriously, criminally underrate the 2010 to 2013 Reds. One of the best spans of Reds success that this franchise has ever seen. And people are like, are you crazy? You know, they never got out of the division series. You're insane. I think I can make that case. I mean, just those were 3 of those 4 years were really outstanding teams. And you're telling me you wouldn't like to have that 90-win 2013 team everyone complained about? I'd take that. And a lot of good personalities. A lot of, you know, mostly fun to watch some of those teams, even if Dusty Baker frustrated us sometimes. So anyway, those are some of my thoughts as to why the Reds may be, I don't know, a little closer to competing than what most people seem to believe. And if you believe the Reds are 7 years from competing, I can't argue with you. They lost 98 games last year. They're in the process of on the pace now to lose 109. I don't think that'll happen. They've never lost that many before, obviously. But I saw some of the, Dan Zimborski. I don't know if I've ever said that name out loud, but he does the Zips forecasting, and which is a great tool. And I was looking earlier today. He had his projections for the rest of the season, and he had the Reds and Braves both at losing 102 games. So 102 versus 109, I don't know. If you're going to lose 102, you might as well lose 109 and get that number one pick, I guess. But, I mean, if they lose 102 right after a year of 98, 200 losses in 2 seasons, yeah, I'm not going to shut you down if you argue that the Reds are not in a position to compete in a couple years. I think if they execute, they can compete. I think that we'll just have to wait and see. I don't know, but I just feel like there's hope, whereas there was, in retrospect, we should have had very little hope back in 2002, 2003, because they just weren't doing the right things. Are they doing the right things now? Like I said, we can argue both sides of that. So you know, stay hopeful, I guess, would be my suggestion. But if you're not, I can't argue with you, and I can't dismiss being upset at some of the decisions that have been made the last few years. There's an argument on both sides of that, I guess. What's happened so far this year in terms of high spots? I wanted to look really quickly at the bright spots, and there have been very few, but you know who has been one is Zach Cozart. What about Zach Cozart? Last year started off the season great. We started beating the drum for him to be a possible all-star candidate, and he had that horrific knee injury at first base, stepping on first base and out for the year. And I openly wondered whether or not he'd be able to come back and play defense. That's what I was worried about. Nobody thought he was as good a hitter as he showed in that, you know, short period that he played last year when he was hitting very well. And he came back this year and kept hitting just like he was. But what surprised me, and not more, I guess, the fact that he's still hitting, even though it's only been, you know, he's only played 37 games, is his defense has been outstanding. I really worried that if he lost a step, it was going to really drop his value as a defender. Cozart's always been one of the best defensive shortstops in baseball, for my money. I love the guy. He makes all the easy plays. He makes lots of great plays. He's, you know, he's Brandon Phillips. He's a young Brandon Phillips in a lot of ways, even though he's not young. He's 30 now. But his defense has been good. His offense has been off the charts in some ways in terms of what we expect from him. That on-base percentage is only .322, which is not great for guys leading off. Although, listen, we've lived through Billy Hamilton and Willie Taveras and Corey Patterson at leadoff. So a .322 on-base percentage seems just amazing to me. But that's what concerns me, I guess, in terms of that being sustainable, is that .312 batting average is powering that on-base percentage. So he's just very reluctant. That's one way to put it. Very reluctant to take a walk. 4 walks all season. Buddy's slugging .518. His OPS is .840. He's got the best across the board, best offensive numbers on the team. And I really hope, and again, here's my, I'm putting my fan hat back on. I really hope that Zach Cozart gets a chance to play in the All-Star game this year. He's been a good Red, a sort of dedicated Red all these years. He's been a great defender that has taken some of the slings and arrows a little bit because he hasn't hit well. As a matter of fact, some of those years, just Billy Hamilton level bad hitting. But he's always been amazing defensively, and people don't always recognize that. And so I'd like to see him get recognized. He's had a good Reds career, whether it's coming to an end soon, as it may be. He's into his 30s, and he's another guy whose trade value has got to be high. Teams like the White Sox have to be looking for a shortstop. And as an aside, the White Sox found him a third baseman, didn't they, in the offseason. I'm happy to see Todd Frazier hitting home runs and starting to swing the bat overall very well recently. Love Todd Frazier. But good for Cozart. Vote Zach. You know, you're doing your All-Star voting, vote Zach. Let's get him in the All-Star game. Because he's been outstanding. And offensively, you know, I told you about Bruce, but really the only other person that's been above water has been Adam Duvall. And Duvall has been good. You know, no complaints about Duvall. His on-base percentage is .294. His play discipline's not great. But, man, when you hit 9 home runs out in left field, and he's got 12 doubles, you know, 31 extra base hits out of his... if I could count, it would be 31. But someone who's good at math would say 21 extra base hits out of his 35 total hits. And that's amazing. That's a crazy total. So, love Duvall. He is what he is. He's not been awful defensively, but how optimistic am I trying to be? I wonder if he could play third, because Suarez, who started off very hot at the plate, has been miserable at third base. And I've given him a lot of slack. He's just learning the position. It's the first time he's ever played it, really. Played a few games in the low minors. I mean, he's learning the position, and it's hard. But he's not giving us a lot to be encouraged by. I wonder if moving him back to short or over to second. And that's something else that Steve from Red Leg Nation has suggested a little bit. Moving back over there. And I tend to agree. I actually thought... because I was so worried about Cozart, I thought they would have left him at short and tried to move Cozart. Shows how much I know. See? That shows how much I know. I thought Cozart should be on the bench this year for Suarez at short. So, offensively, that's about it. It's been pretty ugly. Now, on the pitching side of it, not a whole lot to talk about. Brandon Finnegan's been okay. I don't have any complaints about him. Rosel Iglesias was good before he got hurt. Tim Adelman, of all people, before he got hurt, he was good. And what a good story. Just a great story. Adelman, see, Trent Rosecrans wrote a great piece about Adelman in the Inquirer. If you get a chance, go back and look at that at their website. Just a really interesting story, and he was good, and I hated to see him get hurt because he's finally getting a chance, you know. Of course, everybody else was hurt as well. The best starting pitcher, Dan Straley. I love it, you know, sort of a cast-off who had, and I'm not sure why he was a cast-off, because he was a, you know, I don't know. I felt like he was a guy that could still contribute to a team. I still think he could be in the bullpen for the next good Reds team. But 2.85 ERA in seven starts, you know, good stuff. He's been great. Alfredo Simon, I wasn't going to mention him. Good grief, get rid of that guy for a million different reasons. But how about this reason? After his eighth start, his ERA is 10.16. So I think there's a million reasons that they shouldn't have signed Alfredo Simon and that they should dump him now. That ERA is one of them. Of course, at this point, they can't really dump him because who are they going to replace him with until some of these guys start getting back from injury? I would expect him to be released once some of these guys start coming back from the disabled list. But the story of the Reds pitching staff, you know what it is. I know what it is. This bullpen has been, oh my goodness. I literally laugh about it. It's literally, because we know the Reds aren't going to be good this year, it's literally laugh-worthy to see how they're going to blow a game next. You know, I mean, they've got a guy in their bullpen, the Reds do. This is how bad it is. They have a guy in their bullpen who has appeared in 21 games, and he's still on the roster. He's still in the major leagues, appeared in 21 games, more than all but two other pitchers on the team, who has an ERA of 7.04. That's Caleb Cotham, who had, you know, he did okay early in the year, did real well, actually, at the beginning, but this guy has got an ERA of 7.04, and they can't get rid of him. They can't send him to AAA because there's nobody down there to bring up. It's just, they set the major league record for giving up runs in the most consecutive games ever. And so, as I always say, if you're going to be bad, might as well be historically bad. But it's just a disaster. The good news there, I guess, is that the bullpen is something that can be fixed and relatively inexpensively. And I do think that once some of these starting pitchers that are prospects come up and some of them are not necessarily going to pan out, Michael Lorenzen in one, you know, I like the guy. I hope he turns into a great starting pitcher, but he closed in college, and he's a guy that, you know, could end up being a good reliever in the major leagues. I tend to think Brandon Finnegan actually may stick in the rotation. I've been a little more optimistic about that than most. But even if he doesn't, that guy's got a stuff that's born for the bullpen that'd be fantastic. So, I think they're fine. Not this year. They're awful, but I'm trying to be optimistic, I guess. So, you know, that's sort of where we are right now with the Reds. And I think there is a lot for us to talk about over the coming months about what's going on. And I've teased something interesting I want to tell you all about here in the next few weeks. We'll get to that at some point. But stick with us. I think we're going to have some fun here on Red Leg Nation Radio. And actually, in some of these bad years, it's a little, sometimes even more interesting to talk about where the team is and where they're going, because there's so many possibilities, so many decisions that have to be made, and so many different opinions about what the right thing is to do. And so I think we're going to have some fun. Look forward to it. Tell your friends to go sign up. Go to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast. Go to redlegnationradio.com, and there's links there to subscribe through whatever podcast tool you use to download your podcast so that you get them automatically. Those of you who are already subscribed that haven't unsubscribed during our hiatus, you'll get this one first because we may not post it for a little while at Red Leg Nation. But go and subscribe. Tell everybody about it. We're going to be back at you. And even if we're just talking about how historically bad the Reds are, I think we're going to have fun doing it. So appreciate you listening. Next week we'll be back with not just me and my ridiculous opinions, but some people who actually know something. So, as always, thank you very much for listening to us, taking time. You got plenty of things you can be doing your time, and instead you're listening to me, and I do appreciate that. Honestly, we really do appreciate you listening to us. go on Twitter, at Redleg Nation. You can follow me at Dotson C, D-O-T-S-O-N-C. And if you've got questions, things you want us to talk about, send those to us. And we'll get back at you maybe on a future podcast. So I started to say for whoever my guest is, and I don't have one this week, but for me, Chad, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.